Welcome to the A-Dub Club, a podcast about sci-fi, fantasy, technology, pop culture, the internet, and general nerdery. There are three things that are important to know. One, we occasionally use swear words, but try to stay in the range of PG-13, or at least the kind of R that cool parents are fine with. Two, we may talk spoilers. In this particular episode, we discuss the 2021 movie Dune, and we recorded this in November of 2021, so be warned. And finally, three, most importantly, the movie Dune was nominated for 10 Academy Awards, just behind Power of the Dog. Woof, woof. With that out of the way, welcome to the clubhouse. We have snacks. Welcome to the A-Dub Club. I'm Andrew Whipple.
I'm Alex Wade.
And it is cold in my apartment. This is the This is the part where I pay back for the fact that all throughout the summer, having my apartment nice and cool was really lovely. Now that it's winter, not so much. How are you, Alex?
I'm good. My computer is right next to my radiator, so I turned it off way back in like February, and now I'm afraid to turn it on for fear of my wires getting melted. We'll see how that goes. I like the cold, though, and I like being bundled up in my apartment. So
true. I agree with that. I think my cat is very mad at me for how cold it is. I've noticed that she has started yelling. She's starting having every interaction that I have with her, or if I like walk into a room when she's already there, it starts off with her yelling at me in a way that wasn't the case, say, a month ago. So she's adjusting well. But she has taken to building little blanket forts on the bed and crawling inside of them, which is too adorable to do anything to change. So
yeah,
here we are.
I actually also had a second radiator that I forgot about that it turned on for the first time, and there was a lot of stuff on it apparently, and it started this burning smell in my apartment. It was not great. Not great.
Sick. Cool. What else do you want? speaking of burning smells and I don't know, fire. That's not what we're here to talk about. We're not here to talk about radiators. We're here to talk about... That was the worst fucking segue in the entire history of the world.
Yeah, very bad.
Anyway.
Speaking of hot things, we're here to review the planet Dune. Not a movie. This is a planetary review.
Speaking of hot things, we're here to review the movie Dune, where... as I texted my girlfriend immediately after watching the movie, my 2022 platform is going to be the cast of Dune is too hot.
Fair.
Every single person in this movie is unbelievably attractive. It's unreal. Anyway, but what we're here to talk about, other than the relative warmth of our apartments, is a film that we both saw recently. And our question this week is, what did you think of the movie Dune?
It was good. It was solid. I liked it a lot, and that's three great things about it.
Three great things. It's good, it's solid, and I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I liked it a lot as well. I think as we go on and have our presumably very long and meandering conversation, I think we'll get into more of the interesting details of where exactly do I place my enjoyment on the needle scale. But overall, good movie that I'm glad that I saw.
It's very interesting. I also saw the new Wes Anderson film, The French Dispatch, recently. By recently, I saw that yesterday.
Double Timmy.
Yeah, a lot of Chalamet. The first time I ever saw a Wes Anderson film, I did not understand it. I didn't get it. But then eventually, I don't remember, but I just didn't like it because I was like, I don't understand this kind of movie. Then I started to get it. And I mention this because I have gripes with Dune that are like, they're fine. Like, I excuse them because it's something different than what those complaints are, to be as spoiler-free about it as possible.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. I'm so very curious to dive into that more at a later date.
It's very convoluted. Okay. But
first question, how familiar are you and how into the world of Dune were you prior to seeing this 2021 film by Denis Villeneuve?
I read it once years ago in like high school, I think, maybe college, and just the first book. And like, that's it. And I've played the board game a couple times.
Ooh, I didn't know there was a board game.
It's pretty fun. It's pretty fun.
This is my first interaction. I've never read. Well, I started reading like the first 15 pages or so of it about a month ago and then realized good, but there's no world in which I'm going to be able to finish this in time for the movie to come out. And so I moved on to other books instead. But yeah, I've never read the book. I've never seen the David Lynch movie. Didn't know there was a board game. So this is Dune number one for good old
Andrew. Wow. Okay. That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to have a lot of questions for you on that because I had thought that it did a great job at introducing all the concepts. But then there were sometimes also maybe it felt a little too not hand wavy, but like if you know the book, then you should know this sort of thing, you know?
That I actually will say, because I think this can be fairly spoiler free. I did not feel like I was missing out on anything. So there's an open question, and I've since done a little bit more reading, and it seems like everyone whose newsletter that I follow wants to talk about Dune this last week. But in watching the movie, I didn't at any point feel like there was anything that like was missing that I didn't feel like there was anything missing that I suffered for the fact that it was missing. There was definitely stuff that I didn't feel explained, but nothing that bothered me or left me out in the wilderness. I do get the sense from what I've read of some of the ancillary commentary from the people who are very plugged into the Dune world that maybe some of that is giving me a different impression than I would have gotten if I had some of that extra information.
Sure.
So it like worked within the context of the movie as it was described, but then people are saying like, yeah, but you're actually like, this would be different if you knew this other thing. But yeah, nothing that bothered me within the world of the movie in and of itself.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. What else can we say that is spoiler free about the film?
Oh my God. The production was off the chart. Amazing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was incredible. Oh my God. It's one of the best looking movies I've seen in a very long time.
Yeah. I would say I like the stylistic direction and general spaciness more than I like the recent Star Wars stuff.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. Or it does feel more unique, which is an odd thing to say about a thing that is like the stylistic inspiration in many ways for Star Wars. But like it, I was hearing someone describe it on a podcast, I'm sure it was, that which is a crime because there are no other podcasts other than ours and no one else is allowed to talk about Dune other than us when we do in presumably a month when I find the episode. But they were describing it, it's like it is the perfect balance of ambition in the source material and technological capability in movie making that 2020 and 2021 is the perfect place where those two cross. And if it was 10 years earlier, then it wouldn't have worked to this degree. Or maybe if it was 10 years later, it wouldn't have had the like stylistic restraint to do things so interestingly. And nothing ever felt like it was doing technological stuff for the sake of the technology and the spectacle. It all felt like we are going to push stuff to the limits, but push stuff to the limits for the purposes of achieving a particular stylistic vision, which rules.
Yeah. The style of it was fantastic. And just the kind of tangent, I guess, of like the style of each house and each group of people felt so well defined and done. Which kind of relates to technology, especially with the Harkonnens. But yeah.
Let's see. Ooh, so this will be my test of how much did I learn about Dune. But the spoiler-free 10,000-foot initial synopsis, if you have not seen Dune or read Dune, it centers on Paul Atreides, who is a prince, I think, of one of – or set – thousands and thousands of years in the future in space, but is the prince of House Atreides, a noble house in this galactic empire of sorts, who gets by order of the emperor, they take control of the planet Arrakis, which had previously been controlled for like 80 years or something like that by another noble house, House Harkonnen or Harkonnen. And Arrakis is very important because it is the one place where you can mine spice, which is an extremely valuable mineral hallucinogenic of sorts. And then from there, politics unfolds and action and adventure unfolds as young Paul and his family deal with the fact that they are now thrust into this, not geopolitical, but galactopolitical shenanigans.
Yes, close on this. The one tiny thing I'd gripe with is the spice is enables slight future seeing and is what enables space travel.
Indeed.
I don't think if that was clear in the movie or not of like, so this, what it does is it allows the people who are driving the big spaceships to actually see into the future and to see where the ship will be going so that it doesn't hit any asteroids. Otherwise it's too dangerous to travel through space in this universe.
Indeed. So yeah, fun sci-fi movie, big, bold, brash space opera. And I liked it and it was good. And Timothy Chalamet plays Paul and is great.
Yeah. I don't know. He's great. I just have a very like, he just feels unremarkable. Like his performance I've never felt from his performance that it's like shining beacon of, it feels like the straight man. Like, It felt like Luke, frankly, of like not important, you know, like he didn't fuck up.
Okay. I feel differently, but I feel differently in ways that I think will go in the spoiler section. Anything else non-spoiler that we want to talk about other than good movie would suggest you see it? Space.
Yeah, I think that's about it.
Nice. All right. Then at this point, time for spoilers about Dune. Where do you want to start?
That's a good question. I don't know. Where do you want to start?
That's why I asked you.
I had felt like there were some times and moments where it was kind of not handholdy, but like, here's what this thing is. And like, here's how, and like they were necessary to have these. I don't know if like they felt really well done. Like, for example, the shield and like the very first introduction of combat and being like, you have to move your blade slowly through the shield in order to stab people. And there's just a whole lot of things like that of the sick knife or the explanation of like what spice is or the sand walk or a lot of these kind of explanation-y sort of things that almost felt like a video game sort of way. Like it was a tutorial to a video game, you know?
Yeah. So I will say I thought it worked really well. With the one thing that I would maybe in retrospect have a slight qualm about is that I didn't fully get that it was the, oh, by going slow, that's how you, it goes through the shield. That was one thing that I was a little bit fuzzy on as I was going through the movie, but never enough to take me out of it.
Sure.
And I would just sort of be like, oh, there's clearly something about something that makes some of these things work through the shield and some of them don't. I don't totally know what it is, but whatever, it's fine. And then afterwards reading, I was like, oh, got it. And that actually makes the line that Josh Brolin says around the like, oh, you need a slow knife or something like that. I thought that meant like
it's not a metaphor.
A different type of knife or something like that. But no, it means, oh, you just need to move the knife slowly through the shield.
But very literal.
Yep. But no, overall, I think that was one thing that I was struck with is that the exposition, I think, worked really well, both in that it did things a lot faster than I feel like happens in a lot of other movies, where it was more, and there were more things that were not explained, but like you could understand just by seeing what's happening. The one that really comes to mind is the advisor who does the like, his eyes go white and he calculates all the math stuff really quickly.
That was not explained, was it?
It wasn't, but it was something that I was like, oh, I liked the fact that it wasn't explained. And I got everything that I needed to get from it, which is, oh, there aren't computer stuff and there's people who have abilities to be able to do this sort of stuff and they have value. And like, I think all the stuff that I needed to get from it, I got in the 2 seconds of just seeing his eyes go into the back of his head and he says off a bunch of numbers. Great. Cool. We're good. And then the actual lore of it all came from reading a Substack later.
Sure.
Yeah. The one thing that I do think only sort of hit me as you were walking through a lot of those different examples, part of why the exposition worked well for me is that by and large, for a lot of the critical exposition, it is stuff that is being explained to Paul through the lens of him learning about Arrakis, learning about the geopolitics of things. And that helped to make it never feel too hand-holdy because my hand is being held just as much as his is.
Sure.
And tied into that, the fact that it comes through a lot of different modes. So it's the combo of here we have him reading or watching these like videotapes that are explaining in kind of fun, dry way.
Yeah.
Here's the history of this sort of stuff. But then we also get stuff that's coming from his dad and coming from his mom and coming from Duncan and coming from, you know, basically everyone that he interacts with teaches him something or another that also teaches me, the person who knows nothing about Dune, something or another. So I overall thought that was a strength of the movie, at least coming in fresh.
I guess what I am, I don't know if it's necessarily an issue, but it felt like there was so much of the movie that was exposition, that was explaining and setting up. And I mean, that's also kind of tangent off this of like, this movie was a part one to a part two and possibly three movie.
Yeah.
I did not like that, to be clear.
Like, yeah.
I hate those sort of move. Like, it's just, it's like, then there's nothing here for me to really grip in. Like, this is an origin story. This is a, like, this whole movie feels like a pre-beat, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm torn about how I feel about that because it is definitely the fact that this movie is a part one and that it ends with a very clear, like, it ends with a very clear, here's the next part is coming later, and also doesn't accomplish a full story's worth of stuff within its part one, is definitely the biggest knock that I have against it. And it was that kind of thing where I was like, I feel like everything comes down to Letterboxd for me. It's like, I feel like this would be a 5-star Letterboxd movie if it had an ending, but it doesn't. And so it's like a 4, 4.5 stars. But at the same time, I did enjoy every moment of it for the most part, other than it kind of dragged a little bit in the middle. And I do feel like there was, I don't know, it felt more like an episode of TV that makes me wanting to watch the next part, which was really good and I think is a success of the movie. But yeah, to your point, it's hard for me without having seen the next one and also not knowing what the story is going to be in the next one. I mean, I can take some educated guesses because, hey, Jesus.
Well, and he also said it during the thing of like, I'm going to, he predicted the future and had a dream of he's going to do what, a 10,000 year Reich, basically.
But yeah, it's, I guess kind of where I feel about it is that I think once part two comes out and if part two is just fine, if it's even like, it doesn't even have to be great or as good as the first one, by the mere fact that an ending will exist, it will probably make me like this movie more.
You know, that feels a lot like, this feels very episode 7 of Star Wars.
Oh yeah. 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 Like, I think I agree with that.
It's, I don't know. In comparison,
I think, although I haven't rewatched it, so maybe I'm in probably 10 years, but in comparison to, I think, like Fellowship of the Ring feels like more of a fully contained story that also is the thing that's going to, like, it also, Fellowship clearly feels like this is not the end, but it also feels like this is a story. Unlike the first Star Wars movie, the original, like 1977 Star Wars movie, where it's like, that could just be a standalone movie with no follow-up, and then they added more sequels on top of it.
Yeah. I was about to do the Lord of the Rings comparison as well of like, is this – it. I don't know. I just don't feel like Dune had a lot of heart in it.
Ooh, like, okay.
It felt like it was missing an emotional punch. Like there was so much foreboding and like preparation that it felt sometimes like it forgot to generate its own center of gravity, you know? Like it just kind of expected it to already be there.
Hell yeah. I love that because I totally disagree with that. I totally felt in particular at the moment when I sort of realized more towards the second half, and this should not be a surprise, listen to our Inside episode to know that, oh, I like things when I can understand the structure of them. Once I realized how much of at least this first half was going to be driven by Paul and Jessica and like them as the driving forces of the movie and their relationship as being arguably the most central one, then that both started to click. And I think the rest of the movie fell into place a little bit more for me. And also it was good because those were the two performances that I was, well, with one notable exception that I'll talk about in a little bit, but those were the two performances that I was the most engaged with. And they were the two ones
really?
That I felt like I had the most like, oh, I feel Paul's foreboding and sadness and anger at here. Actually, here's the better way of saying it. What I now see, having watched the whole movie, Dune Part One as being the story of, is Dune Part One is the story of Jesus, who is really mad and unsure about his role as Jesus that was put upon him by his mother. His mother is also equally unsure about this. And then by the end of it, reluctantly, they together decide to go forward with that, knowing the harm and destruction that it might cause. And to me, that was really interesting. And I liked that.
Interesting. Yeah.
But I don't know what happens in part two.
I guess. I don't know. I'm just not invested a lot into the characters. Like I really loved the space, the top down 10,000 foot view pawns and Machiavellian sort of thing that's going on in here, and watching all of these people interact with each other as like chemicals in a system reacting versus any emotional investment in Jessica or in Paul or in these characters who, like the Duke who died, you know, and like there was never any truly emotional moment for me in the film that I felt, which isn't like necessarily a bad thing, or maybe it is, but I don't know. I just felt kind of cold about it.
Hell yeah. Again, hell yeah, because I fully disagree. It's great. I love this. What? I love this.
Why?
Well, or not fully disagree. Basically, for me, there I agree with the assessment of the like two different flavors of stuff that may or may not be happening in Dune and may or may not resonate in Dune. Of there's the 10,000 foot chemicals in a petri dish geopolitics part of things, and
very
then
cool.
There's what I do think is there an attempt at least at the more emotive story and the more emotive story that I think centers on Paul and Jessica and their relationship. And for me, that second one is the thing that's like, yes, this is the juice. I love this. And the first part is the, this is interesting and fun and unique, and I'm glad that I'm watching it. But then once it hands over to Paul and Jessica, I'm like, oh, okay, cool. This is great. However, I
did not see any relationship between them, like at all. Like there was the very beginning moment when she was being a mother, and like beyond that, I haven't seen, I don't know. I just didn't see anything.
Oh,
I just felt like she was being kind of, I don't know. She felt like a very weakly written character.
Ooh. Well, okay. Actually, I could agree with that. I do think for me, a lot of it does come from Rebecca Ferguson's performance, which I think is really good. And I like her a lot in this movie. And I do think she sells, or to me at least, she sells a thing that on the page is more,
yeah, absolutely, for sure,
more archetypal. So I think I would agree with that in terms of, and also I would have loved more of that. Actually, better way of phrasing it, in this world now where in my head I see Dune Part One as the story of Paul and Jessica, given that, I would have liked them to dive more into that and make that more a true through line, as opposed to, particularly because I do think it does make it a little bit disjointed in the movie where they take over that second half, or really the last third of the movie, in a way that they don't, particularly in the middle chunk, prior to the Harkonnen invasion.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah. I guess when I'm saying all this stuff that like I disagree with, blah blah blah, it's that it worked really well for me and I liked it a lot. But I could see if that didn't, I could see it not working, and I could also see if it didn't work, because to me that's the one thing that does give the movie any heart. Then if you aren't getting any heart from it, then the rest of your assessment makes perfect sense if you're not getting anything from Paul and Jessica and their relationship, because that's the closest thing to a heart that the movie is trying to have, at least from my perspective.
Yeah. And that's an interesting concept of also like still thinking a movie's really good when I say it doesn't have a heart.
Yeah. I mean, and in part because like it nails all the rest, like it's about as good of an execution of, if you don't believe a movie has a heart, then this is about as good of an execution of a heartless movie as you could possibly imagine, at least this flavor of of heartless, of like the space opera kind of thing.
Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like there's too much, it's too much preparation, and like I wanted more. Also, maybe part of it is the fact that I think this all happens in the first like 50, 60 pages of the book.
Oh, really?
I'm pretty sure the Harkonnen invasion is like right from the get-go. Like first 20 or 30 pages, I'm super dense. There's Gom Jabbar and explaining of a lot of things. Then like you get to Dune and things immediately go wrong.
Damn.
I think I'm not that. I could just be, also could be a 500-600 page book and I misremembering it. I don't know.
Yeah, I am interested and will be very curious to see, especially not knowing anything about the rest of the story, what will the overall pacing of either the 2-part or 3-part Dune film series feel like?
I think
it'll be something where the pacing choices of the second half or middle, whatever, however they do the next movies, will have a lot of impact on the retroactive feeling of the first.
In a very similar way of episode 7, frankly.
Mm, yeah, that's true. That's true.
Oh, there was a complaint I'd seen online around it being another like white savior movie, which is interesting.
Qualifying statements.
Well, yes, absolutely. First off, huge qualifying statements of me being a straight white guy. And it's interesting how the tone of the movie, I absolutely agree with that sentiment and like how they try to make you feel around who Paul is, especially like you cannot get more allegorical than that. Right.
Yeah.
But then there were some specific moments that like is not big enough to deter the full tone of the movie and what it's trying to say Paul is. But there was like, there's a moment when the Fremen are basically like, who will our next oppressors be? And then immediately clips to like Paul's face sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then there's a second part of this, which I don't think I can spoil.
Okay.
Cause it's, I didn't know this, but like I had read this online in like book 2 and 3 about like what becomes of Paul later on. That's like, it is a white savior movie when it ends with the rise, like versus the fall. Like, is it still a white, like, I guess this movie alone versus the whole story situation, you know?
Yeah. 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 That is interesting. and overall, I mean, it's, there's some messy, or the literal
tribes people are worshiping the white guy come to their planet to save them, as he is the deity who has been foretold for ages. Like,
yeah. And though it is something that's definitely, what I was going to say is that I think it does, and how much of this is in Dune, the book, versus stuff that's added into the movie. My guess is it's in the book because the book is long and complicated and apparently is very hippie-ish. But it does at least complicate that to some degree with this, with both the acknowledgement of, oh, well, the reason they do this is because this secret cabal of witches is going and trying to manipulate people into thinking that preparing for someone to be able to come through and be a deity at some point in the future, as well as then the fact that like Or I'll be very curious to see what it's like in part two, and presumably we're going to get a lot more of the Fremen and interact with them a lot more than we do in this first part. But it does do that thing that like is still also part of the white savior trope, or rather it's been a complication used so often in white savior stories that it is now a trope in and of itself. But the idea of like, actually they're the ones that are more advanced than the people that are coming to oppress them. And they're the ones that are, you know, blah, blah, blah. At least in the case of this one, it is like, it's more, hey, no, they actually have genuinely really fucking cool science shit, not just they're one with nature and blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
But it is not the most, or it's that weird middle ground of both being, if you strip down the story to its most basic elements, it's the most obvious version of it. But then if you add in the wrinkles, then there are at least some wrinkles on them, but also a lot of the wrinkles have now also become part of the tropes. And I don't know.
Yeah.
It's interesting and messy. And I think seeing the hard to, it's the thing that actually makes everything about Dune Part One hard to talk about and hard to really break down is that fact.
It's not complete.
This is the first part of the story. And so you don't know what the argument of the story is, either the explicit argument or the implicit arguments until you know everything that's going to happen.
Yeah. I think maybe that's a lot of why my feelings around the movie is just the fact that it's incomplete makes me feel trepidatious around a lot of things. And like, I don't know. Maybe the setup will all be worth it, but it is mostly set up, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, it's interesting how I'm like not invested in necessarily the outcomes of it and still enjoyed it so much, but like, I don't care that much about it.
Okay.
Like I care that it's going to have more sandworms and cool space battles for sure. And how the Roman politics goes down. I don't know. It's a lot of prep work. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to suss out my feelings about it.
Yeah. I am so interested in Zendaya and that character and what role she plays in the second
movie. I don't know.
I was not expecting her to be as not in this movie as she is, particularly
the marketing
around it. Yeah. Yeah. And like the fact that, oh, she is just a girl in a vision and in a bunch of potentially contradictory visions, potentially not. And then just shows up at the end as just a person.
Yeah.
That was cool in and of itself. But yeah, I think in thinking through what am I, so overall, I'm really, really excited and definitely want to watch Dune Part Two whenever it comes out. The things that are the most exciting for me are what happens to Paul and Zendaya are the ones that, and can we bring Duncan Idaho back somehow? Is the other big one. Because we do have to take a pause at some point to go on a little Duncan Idaho corner. I don't know. And maybe some of this is not knowing what the actual rest of the story is. Also, probably some of this is clearly me being more able to, or me being hooked in more by the Paul of it all in this first part. And so therefore it makes sense for me to be more interested in what looks like the next Zendaya being the next element of the Paul story, potentially in a post Jessica or in a taking over from Jessica as the primary relationship kind of way. But
yeah,
I don't know. Also Zendaya rules and I like watching her in movies.
I there must be something. I feel like I'm being super hipster about this sort of thing, but I am rubbing off of Timothée Chalamet and also Zendaya. Okay. Maybe solely because they're popular. Like, I'm not sure.
Look at you. Look at you.
I mean, I really didn't like her in. She was in like a two-person black and white film.
Oh, Malcolm and Marie.
Malcolm and Marie. I hated that.
Yeah, I liked Malcolm and Marie, but I'm in the distinct minority. I had liked it even acknowledging that it's bad.
Okay, good. But it's bad, right? Like,
oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't think it's as bad as everyone else does, but like it's on a sliding scale.
Sure. I was constantly rolling my eyes at that. And I guess that's the only thing that I've seen her in outside of Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't know, her performance in Spider-Man is like, funny, but like, I don't know. It's just not that interesting.
I agree. She's good in Spider-Man, but it's doesn't get enough to do yet.
I think maybe I'm bouncing off because of everyone thinks that she's like fucking diamonds. And also Timothy Chalamet is diamonds.
She's really, really, really fucking good in Euphoria.
Okay. Maybe that's the one that I need to watch. Like,
yeah.
Because similarly, I love Rami Malek, and like I had watched through most of Dr. Robot before I saw him out of things. Like I was on that bandwagon from the get-go. Maybe I'm just, I don't know. But
yeah, no, that's fair. Also, she wasn't in this movie for more than like 5 minutes of total screen time.
So. Absolutely. Like,
I've always liked, let's get into the Timmy of it all. I've always liked him in the stuff that I've seen him in. In particular, I really like him in Little Women.
I have not seen Little Women.
I really like him in Little Women, and I like him in Lady Bird, but he is, I think, better in Little Women.
I've not seen him in Lady Bird.
That's the thing. You just need to see him in a Greta Gerwig vehicle.
Yeah.
That will solve it for you. But yeah, I liked him a lot in this movie, and for me at least, I did get the white savior who is conflicted about being a white savior and doesn't want, or Jesus who doesn't want to be Jesus, did come through for me. I would have liked it to come through a little bit more. I think that I won't say his performance is perfect by any stretch, but the big thing is I finally get why people think he's really hot, because this is the first movie where I was like, oh my God, yeah. Timothy Chalamet is hot.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally get that.
Jesus. Everyone in this movie is so hot. I don't know if I'll cut out because this is in the beginning of the thing. I don't know if I'll cut that out or not, but like every person in this cast, Stellan Skarsgård may be the one exception. Every person in this cast is so ludicrously hot. It's unreal. Oscar Isaac. Jesus.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Very attractive in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Timmy, I saw him in The King as well recently.
And then how was that?
It's decent. I enjoyed it. Yeah, but I saw him that. I saw Timmy in The French Dispatch as well. And he just plays insolent teen.
Yeah.
And that's his character who has to learn something and grows a little bit by the end of the film. In some way.
Which I won't say he doesn't do that in either Lady Bird or A Little Woman, but I will say he is very good at that in both of those.
Yeah. And I don't know.
Yeah. The running theme of everything that we're going to talk about over the course of this entire fucking episode, I'd feel like, all right, I liked him a lot in this movie. However, I'll find out how much I liked him when I know what he does in the second one and what he has to do in the second one, what his character is going to look like. And that's another point to this is because so much of this movie, and particularly so much of his performance or his role in this movie, is guided by forward-lookingness, literally, and also just like I think that suffuses a lot of his place in particularly sort of the first half of the movie. Before shit starts to go haywire, that adds an extra level on top of it of like, all right, what is, it depends on what actually happens in the next part when all of these visions do or don't come to pass and do or don't come to pass in ways that are potentially interesting. And yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember the book and I can't say anything about this. Mm-hmm. So it'll spoil it.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I was all of that to say, I think he was good in this, but I think here's a question. Do you think he's the right casting for Paul?
Do I think he's? Yes, because Paul is just a bland motherfucker.
Like, I walked right into that one, didn't I?
Yeah. I don't know. Like it doesn't require. He's Luke. He's fucking Luke is what he is. Like Luke Skywalker, to be clear, audience members.
Right. Thank you for saying that again, because that was the thing that I said I wanted to come back to later. Yeah, I agree with that. And also, you can very clearly see how much of Star Wars is influenced by Dune, which everyone has said forever, including George Lucas. But
literal sandworms.
Now I finally know. I understand the reference point. To me, the thing that sets him apart from Luke is one, Luke is much more brash and impetuous and like more of a clearly like, I'm just a dumb teenager in the first movie, at least.
Sure.
However, Timmy's version of Paul, at least, like I got that sense of like, oh, there's some, I don't want to say depth per se, because that feels wrong. But like, again, for me, it worked and I got the vibe of the, fuck, man, I don't want to be Jesus.
Okay, yes, but that's exactly, okay, here's, that's perfect. That's exactly what my issue is Luke is the impetuous teen in the 70s. Like, that's that archetype there. This is the same archetype in 2021. Like,
ooh,
it feels like a modern teenage, this is what a modern teenager looks like.
Okay, sure. You know? I can see that.
And so since it's such a, like, archetypal, like, easy to do thing, I don't know.
Yeah, I buy that. And also I think that's a challenge of, this is what happens when you, well, one, are adapting a story that is based on the Bible and all the like archetypes of old, but then yeah. It itself becomes the inspiration for the archetypes that follow, and then you also make it in 2021.
I think something about those archetypes though is like, the book, at least, feels very non-character driven, just in general.
Hmm.
So maybe that's part of it for me, if like everything's so archetypal and then also lacking the heart, is like the book lacks a certain amount of heart. And
oh, interesting.
Maybe that's part of it. Like, it's definitely, the book is about, you know, politics and not so much about love or truth or stuff like that, right? Like, I literally just watched Moulin Rouge, the movie, like a week ago. And, you know, that movie has heart, right? Because it's not about fucking politics and deception.
Mm. Getting at the heart of the matter.
Ah, clever.
Yeah, that's interesting. Again, haven't read the book, but yeah. You know what part of the movie does have heart, and it's the standout breakout performance from my boy Jason Momoa as Duncan Idaho, the greatest character in cinematic history. I loved Jason Momoa in this movie, in part because his name's Duncan Idaho. That's so cool.
It's a great name.
But also that, like, it was a interesting like breath of charismatic fresh air in this. I like the movie and I love everyone's performances in it. I don't think anyone is bad or off, but like, the rest of the movie is a lot more like
stoic,
staid and stoic and talking about politics and stuff like that. And like, here's this fucking cowboy coming in and just being a badass and doing what Jason Momoa does best.
Yeah, that was, I like it a lot too. This kind of plays in more to the things I'm complaining about of like, it all feels like they're just playing themselves sometimes and they're playing like, which is great. And like, I love Jason, but that sometimes felt out of place. Of just like, I see Jason Momoa. I don't see a pawn in this. I see Timothy Chalamet. I see Oscar Isaac. I don't see these characters' names, you know?
I can see that in that both, I think, going through the Rolodex of the cast, there is no one who isn't doing something that's firmly within their wheelhouse and firmly within their pre-existing persona. Zendaya may be the one, but she also doesn't do anything because she's just in visions. So whatever. And then when we do actually see her in real life, she is playing a similar kind of teen that she would play in other stuff. So actually, even her is a good. But like, Javier Bardem is playing a Javier Bardem character. Oscar Isaac's playing an Oscar Isaac's character. Stellan Skarsgård is playing a Stellan Skarsgård character. So I can see that part. And then also, I love that you do keep coming back to this idea of like, I'm not seeing them as pawns in this I'm not seeing Duncan Idaho as a pawn in a geopolitical thing, because he's very clearly not. And if that's what Dune is or should be to you, which it sounds like is a genuine part of like, don't construe me saying that as saying that like, that's the wrong way to view Dune.
Sure.
Because like, it sounds like that's clearly one of the things that Dune is, especially coming from the book. But in that world, Duncan Idaho can stick out like a sore thumb.
I mean, I loved him. To be clear, that's not like, I'm not criticizing Duncan Idaho specifically.
Totally,
I'm saying
totally.
All of these archetypes are, or all these actors are these characters, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the Duncan Idaho one in particular is that, like, the version of him that's just in the pure action scenes, I think, fits or could fit. Maybe actually that's another interesting thing is, like, how much do the, like, pure action stuff fit into that geopolitical pawn stuff? Is maybe its own separate conversation. But then, yeah, the, like, him being Han Solo, him being the cowboy, it's yeah, not part of your courtly drama. Space court.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
Still loved it. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've been complaining most of this episode, but...
It's, yeah. Yeah, that's true. I know. It was interesting because I was expecting to come in being a little bit more of the... I was expecting to come in being, I liked it, and then it suffers from the fact that it doesn't have an ending, or I don't know how I feel about it, and I'm sort of provisionally putting it as, I really liked it, maybe I will love it once there's an ending to it. But yeah, it turns out I like Paul and Jessica more than I thought I did, or more than I knew there was alternative comparison points to.
Yeah. What did you think about The Voice? Starring Adam Levine.
Ooh. Great TV show. It's my favorite. I catch it every week. The Voice, a couple different things. One, it's just such a cool conceit, and that the idea that, like, oh, you can, like, inception stuff in people's heads using your weird kind of eugenics magic. That's one thing that, okay, cool. Which also, because I don't know how it ends, with all these things, anything that is like, is this good or is this bad? I don't know, because clearly the Bene Gesserit are set up to not be, they are the unequivocal good guys in even just this first movie. They are treated with a like, they've got their own designs and I don't know how we should feel about them. And is this whole plan of theirs a good one or a bad one, or is it both or is it neither? I feel like that came through pretty strongly from the first one, first movie. But yeah, it's like, oh, they're doing eugenics. Are they doing eugenics for good? Are they doing eugenics for bad? Are they doing eugenics for good, but the eugenics is bad?
Yeah, it's not great. It's not great. That's for sure.
Yeah. But, and maybe this also kicks off into other things that we can talk about, The Voice in the theater, because I saw this in a theater on your recommendation, though I probably would have done that anyway. The fucking sound design of The Voice when it clicks into gear and actually works is just it was so cool. And it was like feeling physically shaken in the theater. It ripped. It ruled.
Yeah. And I loved when for the Gom Jabbar, like, we got to see the effects of, like, what it is on you of when they used the voice. She used the voice on Timmy, on Paul, and, like, he just, like, lost the memory in between going to the person. So cool.
Oh, and then that cool moment where it's, like, when Jessica and Paul are captured in the helicopter and she's, like, don't use the voice, you're not ready. And he's, like, but I got to use the voice. And then she's, like, okay. Use the voice better. Tell them to unlock me so that I can use the voice better than you can do it. And then say us all. Oh, that whole scene ruled. I love it.
Yeah, that was a great scene. That was fantastic. Oh, it's a good movie.
It's a good movie. But yeah, the sound design of this movie was nuts.
Yes. I mean, that just the space of it all, you know? The ships and the technology was so cool, and I love the concept of the shields of, like, there's a lot about this movie that's like, or I guess Dune, that's trying very intentionally to bring it, like, back to fantasy in a way, you know, of, like, the voice being magic, or we can. So actually in the book, they talk about how they can no longer use nuclear weapons because of the way how they interact with shields makes them disastrously, like, horrible, like, to the point where, like, so if they used a nuke on Dune would be vaporized basically because of shields and, like, how that works and whatever interaction goes there, whatever science fiction hand wavy magic, right? And then, like, oh, so they have to, like, use swords and fight now, and, like, that's why they can't use guns, because it's
Oh, Good movie. Good movie. The score, I can't really recall whether, I mean, I must have liked it. But even just seeing it yesterday, nothing really stands out to me, I'll admit.
Sure.
Let's see. What are other elements of the movie Dune from 2021? Oscar Isaac is good. Stellan Skarsgård is good and gross.
Oh, God.
His little oil bath.
Yeah. That was interesting as well. Like, this feels very Game of Thronesy as well, of like the Starks, they're the good guys, and the Harkonnens are the bad guys. And that's interesting in the concept of like a political Machiavellian sort of story, you know?
Yeah, so again, we'll see what happens in the second part. But yeah, it'll be interesting to what degree is that. I mean, it's already complicated a little bit by the thing that you were talking about before of like who will, the Fremen calling out like, oh, who's going to be our new oppressors now? And then it cuts to the Atreides. And so the movie is clearly not saying the Atreides are uncomplicatedly good, but it is kind of saying the Harkonnen are uncomplicatedly bad a little bit. And so I'm curious if that gets messier as in the second half.
Yeah. Also, I don't know if it doesn't say, I feel like it does say the Atreides are kind of good. Like,
I don't know. I felt a little bit more mixed on that, both in the sense of the, you know, they are their hands of an imperial power, even if they're trying to do a good job of it, that like, you know, no ethical consumption under capitalism kind of deal.
I mean, yes, but also
I do think some of that comes through from continuing thread that we've talked about all throughout this whole thing, where it's like, I bought into the, the Paul visions and the stuff around is Paul in his world as being space Jesus going to be a catastrophic thing, or at least a complicated thing. I think that's also part of what I'm pulling out from.
Sure. Yeah, that's fair.
Javier Bardem's always good. I hope he does more things in the second one.
Yeah.
Charlotte Rampling was fun as the Reverend Mother. Oh, so here's something. This is now the second episode that we have done on a Denis Villeneuve movie after doing our Arrival episode last year.
I see it. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I see the comparison.
What does that say more about that? What?
Yeah.
What
I mean, stylistically, sci-fi wise alone of like, first off, the ships look similar-ish.
Ooh, that's a good point.
The big giant circle ship versus the big giant circle ship. Sorry, one's a cylinder, the other's a contact lens. But
yeah, get it right. Come on. We demand precision when we're talking about our fake spaceships.
There's that. And then there's also, I think, the interesting, because I don't think Arrival lacks heart, but it's not it's similar vibe that I'm feeling about Dune of like it the heart in Arrival is not the point of it. Is not the central part, but it is like there is a horribly tragic story that's within Arrival, but it feels like the tragedy of that feels more like a story you tell your not tell your kid, a story that's in like a children's book, and like that's what makes it sad, not my feelings for the characters and how they were sad about it.
Hell yeah, great! I love this because that I can see that as an interesting critique of Villeneuve in that there are the movies of his that I love, which I would say are like Arrival, Blade Runner 2049, maybe this gets up there. Polytechnique, I think, would be the other one. Those are the ones that blend having a ton of really, really, really impressive spectacle and some interesting ideas with, to me, stories that are effective and there is some that level of heart. However, the other movies of his that I don't love do just do what it kind of sounds like you're saying around Arrival and around this, where it's like, hey, full marks on all of the technical stuff and even potentially full marks on the like, you have an interesting story that is getting something out of it, even if there is no heart behind it. I think the difference then for me between me and you on these ones in particular is that I do still am able to, for the ones that work for me, pull out, or there is something in them that does resonate with me on more of that heart, emotional, character level. In the case of Arrival, in the case of I wanted to rewatch Blade Runner 2049 before this. I watched about half of it. So maybe I'd change my mind if I watch the rest of it. But
sure. No, it's, I can imagine. I watched it not recently, but it's very similar. Yeah.
Yeah. But in that same thing, where it's like, for me, at least in that first half, I totally did feel a heart out of it, but I felt the heart out of it in like, oh, it's this gorgeous movie about a robot that loves an AI and how that's fucked up. And then everything else around it is sort of secondary. But if you don't pull from that arguably side plot, then all right, it's a gorgeous, pretty, impeccably made movie that may feel a little bit empty in the middle.
Yeah.
I think I have this right now, number three for my Villeneuves after Arrival and Blade Runner.
Interesting. I can see that. It's very good.
And then he'll make a part two. Yeah, what else about Dune? Oh, here's one thought that I do have actually on the film. I've never seen the David Lynch movie in the 80s, so I have no conception of, but other than knowing that it was a flop. I've heard people say that this movie is unfilmable, or Dune as a book is unfilmable as a movie. I feel like this clearly says no, that's not true, because this was good. But I'm curious if you have any thoughts or any takes on that as a
technically that is still true, because this is a movie and it's not finished. So maybe the issue in the past has been there's no part two or possibly even part three.
I could see that.
But no, I think it captured for however many pages in the book that it did. I think it definitely captured what they were.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, no more opinion besides that. They're wrong.
That'll do it. Anything else? Gom Jabbar scene was cool.
Yeah.
Now I can understand all of the various Gom Jabbar references that Griffin McElroy makes. Or I would be able to if I still listened to any McElroy podcasts. Spicy take. All right.
I don't listen to any more either. I'm kind of sad about that.
Yeah. That's our cliffhanger that will lead us on to this is only the beginning. We'll talk more about whether or not we listen to McElroy podcasts in The ADUB Club Presents Dune Part 2.
In 2022 or 3.
If you have things that you want us to talk about in that eventual 2022 or 2023 episode. On that, do we want to commit now to doing a Dune Part 2 episode?
Absolutely.
All right.
Yes. Good question.
So if you have thoughts and opinions for that future episode, you can always get in touch with us anytime between now and then at our email address, which is theawclub@gmail.com. That's theawclub@gmail.com. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter. Twitter is the little death. Twitter brings total oblivion. But you can talk with us there at the AW Club. That's at theawclub. And you can also go to our website which is theadub.club. That's theadub.club. There you will find our topics guide, which is the place where you can see all the various things we've talked about over our, I think this is episode 34. That we have done. So over our 30 plus episodes, if you click on a link to a thing that you're interested in, you will find all the episodes where we talk about that. So you'll find this under Dune, for instance. You can also find our starter guide. That is a series of four-ish, I think, episodes that we think are particularly good. If this is the first one that you're listening to and you want to try out some other ones that we might recommend. And of course, you can find the podcast and subscribe to the podcast wherever fine podcasts are found, whether that is Spotify, Google Podcasts, or Apple Podcasts. With that, that is it.
ADUB Club out.
ADUB Club out.
Pew, pew, pew.
Let's see. What else? Wikipedia page to look at other things about the movie Dune.